With nearly 260 films, that's pared down from as recently as 2 years ago when there were some 350, Toronto is the dominant festival in North America and quite possibly the world. I've seen my share here this year, but getting a handle on the zeitgeist of what's important, what's on filmmakers' minds, is a little like the blind man touching the elephant. Depends on where you touch. My TIFF started out rocky. 5 films the first day, 6 if you count the opening night film the night before, Outlaw King, about the rise of Robert the Bruce, played by Chris Pine, in Scotland in 1304, defeating the English crown. The best of the lot by far was the 4th remake of A Star is Born. I went dragging my heels to it. The classic version, of course, was the 2nd George Cukor's 1954 rendition with James Mason and Judy Garland, remade against all advice 40 years ago with Barbra Streisand, leaving Kris Kristofferson behind as a kind of a celebrity mosquito splat on the windshield of the soul. Imagine, then, that this version, directed by and starring Bradley Cooper, opposite Lady Gaga, was not only the best thing I saw that first day, but was actually good.
Tell me something, girl.
Do you write songs or anything?
I don't sing my own songs.
Why?
I just don't feel comfortable.
Why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Almost every single person has told me they like the way I sounded, but that they didn't like the way I look.
I think you're beautiful.
I'm falling.
Hey.
What?
I just want to take another look at you.
And with good reason. Gaga has been busted out of the burrito wrap and wig costume and returned to the girl she was as Stephanie Joanne Angelina Germanotta on New York's Upper West Side, sort of in the Patricia Arquette mold of a lovable brown French-Italian mouse who looks like the girl next door until she eats your, or rather Cooper's, lunch because, well, he drinks his. Set on the edge of pop and country and western, it's a marketing juggernaut by Warner Brothers that begins October 5th. But TIFF is the start of the yellow brick road that our own outlaw king, Harvey Weinstein, taught the industry to march upon like Sherman towards the Oscars. Barry Jenkins, If Beale Street Could Talk, adapted and directed from James Baldwin's 1974 novel, is an elegantly crafted story of the racial miscarriage of justice circa the 20th century, when a 22-year-old black man, played by Stephen James, in Harlem, is railroaded on charges of a rape he didn't commit, tearing him away from his 19-year-old pregnant fiancée, Kiki Lane. Jenkins won the infamous Best Picture Oscar 2 years ago for his category-busting Moonlight, given for 10 seconds to Damien Chazelle for La La Land. When this novel was written, Baldwin still rode the social cutting edge, from Go Tell It on the Mountain in 1953 to Another Country 9 years later and Beale Street in 1974. It all feels so stately now in Jenkins' classic adaptation, especially compared to another film here, George Tillman Jr.'s The Hate U Give, based on the Angie Thomas novel, which speeds the whole process of racial railroading forward to mirror the very present moment behind Black Lives Matter.
Today, Garden Heights is reeling after the shooting of a 17-year-old black teenager by a white police officer.
We live in a complicated world.
It doesn't seem that complicated to me.
Violence, brutality. It's the same story, just a different name.
The Fremont, California cop who stops the young black man in Thug, the acronym for The Hate U Give, for failing to signal a lane change, becomes prosecutor, witness, jury, judge, and executioner right there on the street. Great cast, including Algie Smith and Amanda Stenberg, Common, and Anthony Mackie. Out October 19th, and Beale Street from Annapurna arrives in theaters November 30. Both films leave in the dust Green Book, in which Italian waiter and club bouncer Tony Lip Vallelonga, played by Viggo Mortensen, is hired to drive jazz and classical pianist Don Shirley, played by an almost unrecognizable Mahershala Ali, from New York on a concert tour for plantation-bred whites in the Deep South in 1962. The film is a reverse driving Miss Daisy, in which the white Bronx is now driving the black Upper East Side. But forgive me for thinking that there's a lot more asked of the black musician here to understand the white Italian in Green Book, which takes its name, by the way, from the Black Motorist Guide to the South, than the other way around. Based on a true story, however, Anthony Lip and the gay Don became lifelong friends, as attested to in Toronto by his son, who hawked the story. So much to see at Toronto this year. The crime caper Widows by Steve McQueen, director of 12 Years a Slave. Can You Ever Forgive Me with Melissa McCarthy as the late novelist Lee Israel. Damien Chazelle's First Man about NASA and the decline of the American male, ironically, on his ascent to the moon in 1969. Two films that exploit and sift our era of mass shootings. Paul Greengrass's 22 July about the Norwegian teen camp slaughter, and Hotel Mumbai with Dev Patel as a waiter in the 2008 terrorist assault on the Taj Palace Hotel. They were both almost impossible to watch. So many films, so little time, but above them all is Roma, the latest from Mexican director Alfonso Cuarón of Y Tu Mama Tambien, Gravity, Harry Potter, and Children of Men reputation. Set in the 1970s, Roma is almost a holograph of Mexican life, the tangle between a housemaid and a doctor and his upper middle class wife as their marriage comes unglued. Shot in the widescreen format of 65mm in black and white, Roma won Venice's Golden Lion top prize. It's a throwback to a level of excellence we rarely see, almost as if it were a lost film by Roberto Rossellini or Vittorio De Sica that fell out of a closet and joins the rare group of film masterpieces. It was produced by Netflix, which famously pulled five films from Cannes this year in a dispute over the issue of theatrical release. Speaking of Netflix, I really don't know why the finally completed Orson Welles film The Other Side of Midnight, finished after some 35 years and paid for by Netflix, was in Telluride and Venice, but not here. Roma certainly was, and it's a film lover's siren call. Finally, every film in Toronto starts with one of the programmers, all the way up to the head of festival, Piers Handling, who's leaving after some 36 years, acknowledging the various Native American tribes for hosting this powerhouse event. Here's Piers before the screening of French director Olivier Assayas's new Gabfest of a film, Nonfiction.
I'd like to start out by acknowledging that this morning's event is taking place on the treaty territory of the Mississaugas of New Credit and the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee, the Anishinaabe, and the Huron-Wendat. And we're very grateful to have the opportunity to work in the community.
Piers is my friend. I admire Piers. I've traveled with him from Sundance, where I skied with him, to Cannes and Berlin, and no one has done a better job of helping to create new architecture for the film business than Piers Handling at TIFF. But we Americans can't stop ourselves from a little eye-rolling that the Mississauga of the New Credit Nation and the other tribes have much say about the festival, or the skyscraper that sits on their land hosting it, and a whole lot of other businesses besides. But it's the thought that counts. They're thoughtful up here. Given everything back home, a guy can get used to that. And I'm Harlan Jacobson.